for your mean, mean pride.
All right. Hi, I'm James.
And I'm Liz.
And we are Pop Culture Whores.
And what was the thing I said last time? I don't have a dick in my mouth right
now. Yeah, that was your opening state comment. I felt it was very appropriate.
It's always appropriate to tell people you don't have a dick.
To remind people that she doesn't have a dick in her mouth.
It's one of the rare moments. Actually, no, most of the time I don't.
Anyway.
It's a sad story of my life.
Anyway. This week, we're actually going to do a review, which we won't be doing very often.
Most of our stuff is going to be more retrospect, although... It's reviews aren't bad. We wanted to review this just basically because looked like a fun movie, and also seeing movies are fun, and we want to support Joseph Gordon-Levitt and all that he does.
Yeah, we saw Premium Rush.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't in the know, Google's right there, bitch. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, okay. Since I'm more professional, I'm going to give an actual synopsis. If you haven't seen the previews, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a bike messenger in New York City. If you live in New York City, you probably know who they are, or you've been passed by people biking like crazy.
Precisely.
He basically gets a package from someone which attracts the attention of some not-so-savory people, including a scenery-chewing Michael Shannon. The whole movie was gif-able Michael Shannon. But, no, it's, it's basically a brainless summer film. It doesn't pretend to be anything it's not. And it's fun. That's the most I can say about it.
I wouldn't say it's quite brainless. Like, when I say a movie is brainless, I mean it's like... It's
Armageddon?
Stupid. Yes, Armageddon was brainless.
I still love Armageddon. Don't judge me.
Judging you all the time.
That had Michael Clark Duncan, Steve Buscemi. We're getting off topic.
I wouldn't say it's quite brainless. I just don't think it has a lot on its mind. Like, here's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's going to ride a bike for 2 hours. Bye.
Anyway, well, no, there was an actual plot. It looks... I actually kind of like the way they because, you know, they subverted the whole what you thought it was going to be. Like, basically someone settling a gambling debt or illegal money. It turns out, there are going to be spoilers on this, that it's to get someone to China who has been blocked because of, you know, China's political...
Because China.
Well, no, because, of China's political manhandling and the fact that if there are people who do speak out against their government and their actions, they will have ways, even if the person's out of the country, to block other family members from coming in or, you know, make their life hell.
I would say that makes him sound like a supervillain.
You know, there are governments that can act like supervillains. Look,
North Korea.
No. North Korea is like a flop supervillain.
Kite man! North Korea's kite man!
But Vladimir Putin is somebody people constantly call a Bond villain, and
he totally is.
It's a joke, but then you remember that he's probably responsible for the deaths of it's not funny, he's probably personally responsible for the death of numerous journalists in Russia.
I'm just remembering the whole thing with the radioactive, assassination, like, man, that sounds like something out of a Bond sequel. A bad Bond sequel. But we're off topic again.
And here I try to bring my international affairs degree into this.
No.
Anywho, so the plot is interesting. The twists aren't big. You can kind of see there's probably something more than what you initially think, but it's fun. The thing I liked the most about it was it didn't give you everything right away. It starts with Joseph Gordon-Levitt getting hit by a taxi, and it kind of jumps around in time. And
it does, but not in... It does it really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, you know, I really liked the way it was structured, the way it revealed things, the way it... And this is going to sound like an extraordinarily nerdy thing to be, like, talking about.
Yeah.
But I really, really liked the editing.
I did, too.
There was this recurring gimmick... Where, like, if he had to, like, go through something exceptionally dangerous...
He'd think of the three ways he could go around
something. He'd see different paths, and he'd see what would happen if he did them. And there was one towards the middle where it was just absolutely hysterical.
Where we actually get a Wilhelm scream, and whenever there's...
Yes!
Whenever there's a Wilhelm scream, you actually just have to yell out Wilhelm. But, the characters being, there was kind of a cartoony quality to it. And I like that. I mean, they make reference to his name, Wile E. Coyote.
Especially, there was a lot of it in the color scheme, and I know it sounds weird to say...
No, it doesn't.
To, like, bring up a color scheme in a movie that takes place in a city. And that's as someone who has lived in New York, who,
most of the movies I've seen about cities have some of the best color schemes I've ever seen. Dark City.
Yeah, no, like in a real-world city.
Oh, okay.
But I will also say, as someone who has lived in New York, who, around the time this is going up, will be living in New York again...
Oh, you fucking bastard. I'm going to be stuck here in Stamford, Connecticut.
I will say that I really like they didn't go with, like, the generic New York location.
Yeah, I was watching this, and I mean, I went to school in Staten Island. I'm gonna qualify that. I went to Wagner, but I go into the city a lot. I still go into the city, and, you know, the fact that it took place in Chinatown was one of my favorite places. Uptown, we got to see one of my favorite little things, just because I love the Natural History Museum. And so you see him sort of going through the side entrance that you'd see.
Yeah.
The thing that bothers me is most of the time, whenever you see New York in a mainstream film, you only see Times Square or Grand Central or, even Union Square is starting to become a little bit of a, it's not Union Square, it's just more the East Village is starting to get used a lot.
Well, that's because it's really,
it's what the tourists know.
It's what the tourists know, but also the Village in particular is really good for establishing what I'm calling at this point, like, rent cred, like,
yes.
Hipster cred.
Please do not bring Rent in with hipsters. Two completely different fucking things.
I know, but that, you know, in the 90s, it was, like, the Rent crowd, like, the starving village people.
And now it's hipster kids who are living off their parents' trust funds, while people like me got scholarships and took out loans to go to school.
Exactly, but,
fucking rich people, I hope you will burn.
Her opinion is not shared by all of my
readers. I know, it's not. I'm totally joking, but I do hate Mitt Romney.
Okay.
That is shared by you.
Yeah, I can't deny that. I liked that it went with all offbeat locations. I liked that it was, you know, someone on the set, probably either the writer or the director, clearly lived in New York, clearly knew bike passengers.
And knew the dangers that they faced. I mean, like, whenever I go to New York, even in Times Square, you see them going, like, right past you, and you wonder, how the fuck are these people in that bad?
It takes a
like,
lot.
I took my brother there once, and he's just like, who are they? I'm like, they're bike messengers. What are they doing riding their bikes in the street?
Delivering messages.
Liz, that's dangerous. Yes, I know. How do they not get hurt? They do.
They do quite a lot. And I liked, like, usually when you say, like, taxis are a menace, you're thinking, you know, the Middle Eastern driver guy. And not to diminish the threat of Middle Eastern drivers.
I'm just saying, we've both been in cabs with some people, and they drive like there's no tomorrow, and like there's no traffic laws here, and it's why I walk.
I like that they also had, like, the passengers getting out of their cars.
Yeah, because, like, that'll happen if you see accidents in New York. Everyone gets out, everyone stops.
There's also a lot of really good, like, I wouldn't call them action sequences,
yeah,
per se, but, like, good chase sequences.
Yeah. And I'll say this, as someone who, I like chase, I love chase scenes. Like, French Connection, one of the best chase scenes ever.
Okay.
And actually, the big finale of, the finale of the Blues Brothers are really the best chase scenes ever. The finale of Road Warrior is my favorite chase scene
of all time. That's a good choice.
In watching this, it is a chase movie, but it's actually, like, in New York, if you've ever been in New York, I always go, why the hell are there cars in here besides taxis? Because if you've been to New York, how do you get anywhere in a car? I still don't know this. I walk everywhere and take the goddamn subway.
Most people do.
I know. So why have a car? And so,
what always bothered me about Seinfeld.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
Like, they take cabs.
The film actually starts with Michael Shannon in the car chasing Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and it's stopped very quickly by the fact that traffic in New York happens.
It also is great. It also uses the sort of, like, offbeat ways that you can use a bike in a chase sequence. There's this one towards the end in
where he slides under a platform truck.
No, like, I'm talking about the one in the impound yard.
That one's sort of paying heed to the BMX bikes.
Yeah. If I had to come up with some issues with it, other than the fact that it's not, like, a very, very smart movie, like...
But it didn't try to be.
It's not a dumb movie, per se, but it's just, like, a movie that doesn't have anything particularly deep or profound to say. It doesn't want to, like...
But you have fun watching, and not every film needs to be profound and deep.
I agree.
I like Jawbreaker.
But I honestly think, like, the best chase sequence in the entire movie is the one at the very, very beginning with the car.
Well, yeah.
It's what I call, like, Iron Man syndrome, where, like, the action sequence at the end isn't as good as the ones in the beginning and the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who's seen Iron Man knows exactly what I mean.
Yes.
But
as much as I loved Iron Man.
Everyone loved Iron Man. We all loved Iron Man.
No one loved Iron Man 2. No one loved Iron Man 2! No one loves Milhouse!
Nobody likes Milhouse, yes. I must have other complaints.
My complaint was Michael Shannon, who is a fantastic actor. Revolutionary Road, he's great in. He's great on Boardwalk Empire, even though I'm not a huge fan of Boardwalk Empire. Please don't crucify me. Game of Thrones deserves every award ever on HBO. But...
Thrones.
But, he in actually, Take Shelter is a fantastic movie that came out this year. Underwatched movie. Should have gotten more, and, like, he's fantastic in it. I felt like there were some moments where he truly came across as menacing. Like, there's a scene in the ambulance where he kind of does come across as, like, this guy is obviously pretty desperate for something. But then there's times where he comes across as cartoony, and I don't know... I don't know if that was perhaps... I mean, the character is a dirty cop who obviously has impulse control problems and gambles a ton. I don't know if maybe Michael Shannon thought he'd play him as someone who tries to be tough but isn't, because he does come across as a guy who, for the most part, is not menacing, just tries to be. And again, that might have been a choice on either the actor or director's part, but there are some times, especially when... He tries to, like, when he yells is when it becomes funny. And sometimes I think it's intentional. Like, his character actually gets some laughs with what he does, but there are other times where it just, again, it comes across as a little too cartoony, and he doesn't make a very good foil. But again, I wonder, I mean, just considering his actual character, is he supposed to be this big villainous foil, or just someone who is at the end of his rope?
I also had some issues with the villain. I thought he starts to flirt with being, like, you know, cartoonishly super villainous, whatever, towards the end, and a little bit towards the middle. I thought there was some odd structure issues at the halfway point, especially with, like, this rival bike messenger.
Seems like they added it in for some reason, and it was never developed. I mean, like, when the two have a race, it's funny, but...
Yeah, I think they just put it in there because they wanted to have a...
Love triangle.
Not even a love triangle. Like, the girl is clearly not interested, which means that the love triangle is not going
to
go anywhere.
Actually, I'll get to that later, but keep going.
But I felt that his character was mostly because they wanted to put in some, like... They essentially needed a late second act tension build, and they needed him to, like, have the thing and be a douchebag about it, but he has no particularly good reason to be a douchebag about it.
Well, I mean... Other than, hey, there's more money at stake.
But, you know, there's a point where he's like, hey, I'll give you the money for it. And then he's like, nope, douchebag.
Yeah. And again, one other thing that kind of bothered me, it's technical, is I felt that the post-production sound editing sounded off for a few things, particularly Michael Shannon's dialogue. It kind of felt like it wasn't syncing with his movement or the movement of his lips. Like, well, you make movies, so you know sound has to be added in.
I know.
It's something that, like, it was only for, like, a few times, but I kind of caught it, and I'm like, it took me out.
I'd assume that at that point they were running up against, like, a deadline, so they decided to rush it.
I know. It's still something I caught.
If you, for example, best example of this, if you watch Scrubs, right?
On and off, I would. Followed it.
The second episode, there's a line that Dr. Cox has, which is very, very clearly not at all synced up with his... lips. So, also The Room. The Room was actually a study in bad
North by Northwest, they had to dub in a line.
Yeah.
So, I learned that watching TNT.
Well, The Room was actually a really nice, nice study in bad sound editing, but I don't want to bring up
The Room.
The Room
is a good study in bad everything.
But, I didn't notice too many editing problems. Maybe it's because I wasn't paying attention to the sound design.
For some reason, sound, like, is something I always hear. I'm hypersensitive to it,
I think it was because, you know, it's not a bad script in the way that, like, again, Armageddon is going to be my punching bag for this today. All right, let me use another
one. You just saw my face.
Well, give me a, like, bad movie that we haven't actually discussed before to be at my punching
bag. Transformers 2.
Okay,
Revenge of the Fallen.
Revenge of the Fallen, the way that, it wasn't a bad script in the way that Revenge of the Fallen
yes,
had
I was
a bad
saying,
script.
Are you saying Revenge of the Fallen wasn't a bad script?
No. It wasn't Premium Rush didn't have a bad script in that way.
It's a simple script.
But it didn't have a very complex script, and once I realized that, oh, it's a sort of movie where I'm not going to have to pay attention at all of the scripting. That includes, like, including movies that are good, like The Avengers. I pay no attention to The Avengers script. Does The Avengers script, other than, like, gag lines, is just, here's a bunch of guys. They have to join together to beat up aliens.
Here's my exposition.
They have to get together to beat up aliens. You get it? We're moving on.
The Avengers is a national treasure. You be quiet.
So maybe it's just like I started like ignoring the dialogue to a certain extent.
No, it's more of a thing that I've always had with like sound and like sound editing when it can change there. To bring back Armageddon, there is a point in Armageddon where it's very early, where it's the astronomer guy,
mm-hmm.
and he says, "Get my phone book," and then the editing changes to get the name, get those guys at NASA, but the sound editing between his first line of dialogue and that second line of dialogue, I don't know if it's how they shot it or how they recorded it, but it's completely different, and it, to this day, has stuck out for me. It's like, it annoys the fuck out of me.
If there's one thing I know about the editors on Armageddon, is that they were all drunk.
Shut up.
Have you seen the editing on that movie?
Yes, I have. It's kind of terrible.
Glug, 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 glug. Alrighty, let's cut that there.
But, well,
Sansa.
Okay, yes, drunk Cersei. But no, like, it's always been something that, like, even when I was younger, I'd pay attention to. It's a weird thing. But my other big thing was, again, I like chase scenes. I kind of wish there were more. But, I mean, especially because I'm like, oh, it's a chase movie, but with bikes, which you can really do well in New York. And there are some great chase scenes. I almost kind of wish there was a little bit more, but that's...
I do think it sort of slows down towards the end. And,
yeah.
I don't know, like, I really liked, like, the last sequence, but the way they get the villain out of the way was kind of, like, a silly moment. Like, I understand what they were doing with it, I understand the physics of it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a silly-looking moment.
Yeah. Oh, well, he gets shot with a .22 bullet, which they're very small.
They are.
And in some cases, they will enter, but not exit all the way, and so actually what they can do is, like, go around, ricochet inside of your skull, and essentially shred up your brain. A bit. Okay,
this is
what my friend who has a shit ton of guns told me.
Well, it's a... That makes sense, and it was a good... You know, he died, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, the villain dies. Spoiler alert, I guess.
Shocker.
But I guess it was, you know... You see someone get shot in the movies. If you're going to suspend our disbelief about some of the shit he pulls with that bike towards the middle...
Yeah.
I suppose we could suspend our disbelief and have him go...
Yeah. I don't know, I actually kind of like that. I'm like, that's... kind of what could happen with a bullet like that. So
I will say, in terms of compliments, I kind of want to make love to the stunt coordinator.
Oh, yeah. Stunts were great. One thing I liked about the movie is I kind of was groaning because I'm like, oh, we have a girl bike messenger and now we're having a love triangle. But as you mentioned, she's not fucking interested, which I liked. She actually is someone who, in a lot of movies, they're getting a little bit better now. Like, thankfully, Joss Whedon did the Avengers and stuff, and you know, with Catwoman in The Dark Knight, where they have women who, there's not a huge deal about them being women.
Yeah.
They're actually like, oh, we're actually characters, and our vagina has very little to do with anything. And so, yeah, she's a competent bike messenger, she's a very good bike messenger, she's clearly got some issues with Wiley just being a jerk, but, you know, she does her job well, and she is actually integral to the plot.
She does.
She has an effect on the plot, and I'm like,
she does.
Bravo!
She does get involved. To be fair, all the good Joss Whedon did was undone by Twilight.
Everything good is undone by Twilight. But yeah, no, so yeah, there is enough good in this film to essentially outweigh the cons. It's probably, I don't think it didn't make a ton of money this week. What bugs me is that Obama's America movie. And I'm sorry, I'm not the Obama's the greatest thing ever, but sweet Jesus.
The fuck is this?
Yeah, it's like a neocon movie where they're like, he's gonna cause the death of everything. And I'm like, look, for God's fucking sake. You know, every president makes mistakes, and at least, you know, in this case,
except
we can
Reagan. Reagan makes no mistakes.
Reagan made a ton. Actually, Reagan had most historians.
No, let's not get into politics.
But yeah, no, it's just one of those things where it's just like, oh, for God's sake, you're fucking reacting just because. And I'm sorry, I think it's mostly motivated by, you know, white guys who are seeing their world slip away. And I don't know, my father's an angry white man, so I'm kind of happy that you all are leaving. I don't think any angry white men listen to our... I said angry old white men.
Oh, there we go. Like, hey.
I don't think any of them listen to our podcast, but when the angry, bitter old white men demographic kind of leaves, I think our world, we can finally, you know, start investing in cool things like science again, and then we can go to the moon and Mars and maybe have intergalactic space travel when all the fucking right-wing Christian men die.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Bill Nye the Science Guy is the greatest man ever.
He is. He really is. I was saying something.
Yeah, like, the movie did not do well at the box office. Maybe this is one that'll find another life. on DVD?
I don't know if it'll do that. I don't know if it'll... It might, especially among, like, the biting community. I think it's the Expendables that's kind of swallowing it.
Yeah. And Paranorman. Paranorman is still doing well. I'm actually going to see Paranorman this week before we do our summer wrap-up.
All right. Fair enough. I'll try to see it. I'm trying to
or
think.
You could see The Expendables, too.
No, why would you do that to me? Why would you do
why
that
would
to
you
me?
Not see The Expendables, too?
Why would I?
I love the first movie. Okay, you know what we said? I said at the beginning of the movie that Premium Rush is not a movie that tries to be anything. It isn't. It's a fun action movie that you can go for an hour and a half and just watch. The Expendables is that, too, but with a lot of your favorite retro action heroes and action heroes of today just blowing shit up, and they know that's all they're doing, and I love every minute of it.
Chuck Norris is in it, and Chuck Norris...
Chuck Norris is a terrible human being.
I was about to say, Chuck Norris is in it, and he automatically makes movies worse.
I know, but come on, we have Bruce Willis, Jason Statham, Jet Li, Terry Crews, Arnold! Bitch, he did Terminator 2,
did,
Terminator,
okay.
Total Recall.
He did, okay.
Fucking Conan.
I will admit that, but he did a lot.
He did Terminator 2. Everything else he does is automatically amazing.
I was going to say, he did do a lot of...
He did Predator!
He did Junior, too.
He did Predator.
Junior.
God, shut up.
He got pregnant.
You know what? I think men should get pregnant. Punishment for your ass-foolishness against
just
women.
Not Arnold Schwarzenegger, damn it.
Oh, God, we don't need a vision of him and his... Arnold
baby. All of our listeners, Google it. Google image it. Your mind will never be the same.
It is kind of awful.
But come on,
he's been in enough action movies to earn some cred.
I don't know. I might see The Expendables. Either way, I don't think Premium Rush is going to be like that big of a failure if it fails, because it doesn't look like it was too expensive.
It was $35 million, actually.
That's not that expensive.
See, I look at that and I'm like, that's fucking expensive for a movie. I still look at movies and go, oh, that has to cost only $10 million, unless it's like, you know, a big budget action film.
No, the average action film actually costs, it's my punching bag all week because I just saw it and still hurts myself. Jack and Jill cost $79 million to make.
Why?
I think they drove a jump truck out of... I think it was just Adam Sandler giving money to all... You know what? I don't want to get into that. It hurts my soul.
It hurts your soul to know it exists.
It hurts my soul to have seen it.
Well, I didn't see it because I love myself.
Meh.
I love myself too much to subject myself to Jack and Jill.
Meh. But on that note... Let's wrap up.
I would give it a shot. I would definitely give this a shot. It's a good sort of end of summer movie. And this is the type of summer movie that comes out in August, where all the big budget ones are gone, but they're still trying to put a few, like, fun action movies out before the awards movies come out.
Summer is, like, June, July is the big summer times.
August is where they dump.
It's like January and February part two, where they dump stuff they don't think can compete.
And then occasionally we'll get some hidden gems. Like, I haven't seen it yet, but Paranorman has been getting fantastic.
District 9 came out in August, and District 9 was the best movie of 2009.
In your humble opinion?
In my humble opinion, or my not-so-humble
opinion. Inglourious Bastards came out in August, if I remember
correctly.
Which was my favorite movie of 2009.
But August, you occasionally get hidden gems. For the most part, it's garbage. This is good garbage.
Exactly. Actually, I wouldn't even call it garbage, because you know what? I did not feel insulted at all watching this.
Yeah, it's if you're in the market for an action movie, or a chase movie in particular, and...
In a New York movie that does show you New York. When I saw the piers, I was like, hallelujah.
I would probably recommend this.
I would. It's although it is definitely something, I thought this was definitely going to be a good big screen experience. It's one where I think it'll translate fairly well to a small screen. It's not like an Avengers where, I mean, I love the Avengers with all my heart, but man, seeing that on a small screen is going to be weird.
I was trying to think of, like, Independence Day.
Independence Day is good on any screen.
It is.
And
it
at any time. And at any time.
Welcome to Earth.
Welcome to Earth. That's not called close account.
But with that, I'm still James.
I'm still Liz.
And we're signing off.
All right.